I'm reading from verse 13 of chapter 3 in James. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere, peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire, but do you not have, so you kill. You desire, but do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. You adulterous people, don't you know that friendship with the world means enmity against God? Therefore, anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God. Or do you think Scripture says, without reason, that he jealously longs for the Spirit he has caused to dwell in us, but he gives us more grace? That is why Scripture says, God opposes the proud, but shows favors to the humble. Submit yourselves, then, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Come near to God, and he will come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Grieve, mourn, and wail. Change your laughter to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourself before the Lord, and he will lift you up. Brothers and sisters, do not slander one another. Anyone who speaks against a brother or sister or judges them speaks against the law and judges it. When you judge the law, you are not keeping it, but sitting in judgment on it. There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and destroy. But you, who are you to judge your neighbor? Thank you.
Thank you, Anna. Well, as you know, we've been working through James, and we've got a couple more to go. And hopefully we'll start up with that one. But one of the key things to this is I keep coming back to the verse in Hebrews 11, verse 1, that says, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. Oh, I forgot about that. That's not there for any particular reason, except that popped up on Facebook the other day and it kind of cheered me up. Does it make you feel good? That's one of my many grandchildren. That's little Evie, who's number 9, I think. Don't know, I lose track now. But apparently she did that totally spontaneously. Mum sat her on the wall, she stuck her hands up in the air, a great big smile. So I thought that would cheer us up. Did you feel cheered by that this morning? So it wasn't there for any particular reason, and I almost forgot that I'd put it there. Thank you. Let's move on to the first one. Faith. Faith in action. Biblical faith is certainty. When I came down to church this morning, into my bag I packed obviously my books and my Bible and preaching notes and other things like that. But in the top of my bag I put, what do you think, tucked across the top? No, chocolate cake, Frank. No, you're quite wrong. It would have been a bit squashy. I tucked my umbrella because I don't have enough faith that it won't rain before I get home. So I've taken every eventuality. Because I'm not sure. There's an uncertainty. It says on my phone that there's a 40% chance of rain today. So I was hoping that walking down to church would be in the 60% bit, not the 40% bit. I hoped. I didn't have a lot of faith in that and a lot of faith in the weather. You see, hope and faith in the Bible are not kind of uncertain like that. Will it rain? Won't it rain? Shall I take my umbrella? Shall I not? Always find I've left it in the office on the day that it does rain and all those sort of things. Faith and hope in the Bible are certain things. Not because we've got enough faith, but because God is faithful and God is dependable. And we can put our faith and trust in God because he keeps his promises, because he does what he says. So faith and hope in the Bible are not those sort of vague thoughts of, will it rain? Shall I take my umbrella? Not those sort of vague kinds of faith and vague kinds of hope. They're certainties. Not because of us, but because of him. And when we're talking about faith, we always need to remember that it is a certainty, that it gives us certain hope. The words at the end of the funeral service say, as we put the person in the grave or in the cremator, we say, in sure and certain hope of the resurrection to eternal life. For those who put their faith and trust in Christ, it's sure and certain. And I love to repeat those words. And I remember taking my father's funeral and standing by the graveside, and when I said those words, the certainty that rose up in me, my Father is with the Lord, in sure and certain hope. Faith and trust are not vague concepts in the Bible. They're sure and certain. And so far in the passages we've looked at, we've seen that faith works. In the middle of troubles, in the middle of difficulties, faith changes attitudes. It doesn't actually change the circumstances. You can have faith and trust that things will work out. Your circumstances can be just as awful and just as bad, but in the middle of it, you can be at peace. That's what the Bible says. And in fact, James says to us, if you remember, that we actually welcome trials and tribulations because they strengthen our faith. And in the middle of trouble, God is right there. The second thing we've learnt is faith produces. When we put our faith and trust in God, we are changed by that. Something begins to happen. We begin to live it out. We begin to turn it into action. And James is really saying, if your faith is not active, number one, it's not a lot of use. And number two, it's actually questionable whether your faith is real, if it's not actually being worked out. We need to work out our faith together. Faith produces. Holiness in the Bible is a choice. One of the songs that we sing has the line in it, I choose to be holy. I choose to live God's way. It's not something that God forces upon us. God doesn't force us to live in a particular way. We're not locked in a sort of Christian prison camp where God is forcing us to do things. We choose to live God's way because we believe and we have faith that that is the best way for us to live. And then last week with Simon, the week before last, we had a testimony week last week, didn't we? It was really good. We learned that faith relates. It determines, this faith in God determines how I treat others, how I behave towards you and how you behave towards me. And favoritism is outlawed. I'm not allowed to have my favorites in the church. I'm not allowed just to allow the good-looking ones to sit near the front and the not-so-good-looking ones to sit near the back. That doesn't apply to anybody this morning. We're all mixed up together. And in God's sight, we're all equal and we're all the same and we're all attractive. It determines how I speak. We thought in our house groups about how we use our tongues, the words that come off our tongues. And there's a fascinating passage in James that talks about the fact that we can say good things and bad things with the same mouth. Do you notice that? And yet he says, if you've got a spring of water or a tap, it doesn't produce salt water and smooth water at the same time. So isn't it amazing that we can use our tongues for good or we can use our tongues for bad? There used to be an expression when I was a little boy that was, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. Unfortunately, that's not true. You know, words can really, really hurt, and words can change people's attitudes for the rest of their lives. Saying to someone, gosh, you're looking a bit on the fat side today, can actually undermine that person's confidence for the rest of their lives. I've met people in the past that I've talked to who've had words like that said to them in the past, and it's affected the whole of the rest of their lives. So be careful how we use our tongues. So we've learned so far then, faith works, faith produces, faith relates. Today we're going to go on looking at faith-controlled living, and the next one should teach us about wisdom as lifestyle. Wisdom as lifestyle, from that passage that Amnah read to us. When the going gets tough, the tough get wise. What did it say in James chapter 5? If anyone lacks wisdom, what should he do? Ask God. What sort of God is he asking? The God who gives freely. James paints a picture of this God and says, if you need wisdom, ask for it. Are you good at asking for stuff? Sometimes people say to you, if you need my help, ask me. And you know, sometimes you know the difference between the person that really means that and the person that's actually saying it to get away from you. But God really means it. He says, if you need my wisdom, ask for it. Come and say, Lord, I need your help. And you know, sometimes when people, when you come to somebody and you really mean it and you say, when you need me, just call. One of the things about being in funeral service is we say to our clients, if you need us, we're here 24 hours a day. We're on the end of the phone. We mean it. If you need us at 10 o'clock at night, ring us at 10 o'clock at night because we're here for you. And as Christians, that's even more true, isn't it? We're there to be. And God is always available for us. He says, if you need this wisdom, ask for it. And God will give it to you. Sometimes not in the way we expect. Sometimes not in the timescale that we've expected. But he will and does give it. What did God say to the people in the Old Testament? I love that verse in Micah 6, verse 8. He says this. He has showed you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. So that was a simple thing that God asked for the people of Israel to be like. He asked them to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with their God. And it seems to me that James is saying something very similar to these people. Let's think for a minute of those three things. Justice, mercy and humility. How would you define the word justice? Somebody give me a definition of justice. What is justice? Truth, it certainly is. Truth. What goes along with the truth? How does justice treat people? Fairly. It's fair treatment for all, isn't it? You know, do you sometimes look at the news and you think, that's unfair, that's unjust? I'm afraid, thinking back, my children used to say to me when they were little, Dad, it's not fair. Do any of your children ever say that to you? It's not. Do you ever say that? And sometimes it is. And I had to say to them, unfortunately, life is not fair. But as Christians, we're seeking justice, not just justice in the courts, but everybody treated the same. And we are called to exhibit that justice, to treat everyone with exactly the same care and love that God has for them. So it's fair treatment. What about mercy? Definition of mercy. If I'm going to show you mercy, how am I going to behave towards you? It certainly means forgiveness. Yes, me being prepared to forgive you. Yeah, there's another good word that fits in with mercy as well. Undeserved kindness. That's absolutely brilliant definition. Because it doesn't have to be the person that doesn't deserve to be shown mercy, but you are showing mercy. Another word that was often used of Jesus. Somebody said love. That's true, but there's another longer word. Compassion. Mercy is about having compassion. Okay, Wendy, you get 2 points for that. You can stay as a deacon for a bit longer. Compassion, less than deserved. I read this as a definition of mercy. It says this, mercy is compassion or forgiveness shown towards someone whom it is within one's power to punish or harm. So in other words, you have the right to punish somebody or harm somebody and you decide you're not going to even though they deserve it. That's showing mercy. What about humility? Definition of humility. Who's the most humble person in church? Would you like to put your hand up? Oh, Robin. Thank you, Robin. I think you've just sunk to the bottom of the list. Well, how would you define humility? Sorry? Humbleness. How exactly is humbleness? Is that saying, oh, I'm not really good enough. I'm so much not as good as you. Is that humility? It's not. Sorry? It is being servant-hearted. Servitude, you said, didn't you? Yes. It is having a servant heart, having a care for others. It's also having wisdom, because it says here, who are the wise ones amongst you? What does he say here? Who is wise and understanding amongst you? Hands up those who are wise this morning. I've played a wise man before in a play. I don't know whether it really worked, but Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show it. Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. So God's wisdom in my life means I am humble. Now, what does humility mean? It doesn't necessarily mean always putting myself down. Romans 12, verse 3 talks about thinking of yourself, but not too highly. But on the other hand, think of yourself, it says, with sober judgment. I think there are two things that Christians do, that both of which are wrong. Sometimes we think too highly of ourselves. Sometimes we think, I'm the most important person in this church. Well, I am the pastor and you do pay me, so I must be the most important. I chair some of the meetings. I must be the most important. That's one thing that's wrong. The other thing is wrong, and apologies to those who always hide at the back without good reason and always say, no, there's someone better than me for this job. That's not humility either. Somewhere in the middle is humility. Humility is recognizing the gifts that God has given me and using them in a powerful way. So we're called then to act justly, love mercy, to be humble. That's God's wisdom. Should be another one coming up. That's it. I liked that quote. I found that this morning when I was looking online. Humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less. Does that make sense? It's not putting yourself down. It's not saying, I can't do this. It's saying, I can do this because God has called me to do this. God has given us the strength. You know, we all have gifts. We all have abilities. We all have the ability to live this way because God has given it to us. And sometimes, you know, do you ever sit down and you say to yourself, I just can't do this. This is something I can't do. And God says, you can, you know. You can, you know. You can do it. And that's what God is saying. We're not supposed to push ourselves forward all the time. That's worldly wisdom, James says. But our wisdom is not to put ourselves down, but to recognize what God has given us, the abilities God has given us, and use them. Next one, thank you. Recognizing and doing. Here's some of the things that James says are pictures of wisdom in our lives. He talks about envy in this passage. Where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and every evil practice. Selfish ambition. What's selfish ambition? We talked about ambition earlier on. There's nothing wrong with being ambitious. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be something in life, to be whatever it means, to be successful. That's not wrong, to be able to do the best you can in the career that you've chosen. I know, Sam, this week you've been struggling with your exams and you've got through them, and we're going to wait and hear the results. But you've got an ambition to be a good doctor, haven't you? You don't want to be a bad doctor, do you? Your ambition is to be a good doctor, to do the best that you can. And it should be, shouldn't it? I'm sure we wouldn't be happy if Sam thought, I'll just be a rotten doctor. I'll do as little as I can and I'll, you know. He wants to be the best that he can be, and that's absolutely right as far as God is concerned. But if we, you know, say, I want to do this career just to make as much money as I can, I'll tread others down on the way. That's the worldly wisdom that James is contrasting. Selfish ambition says me first. Why? Wisdom from God says God first and God's ways first, because God's ways are best. So I want to be the best that I can be in Christ. Is that your aim in life? To be the best that you can be in Jesus Christ. To use the gifts that you've got in the best possible way. Not boasting about your achievements. Not coming to church on Sunday and saying, I've been so humble this week. Oh, you'd be absolutely impressed. My humility has been absolutely stunning this week. You really should have seen me. And telling, you know, that's not really the way we're supposed to be. Not boasting. But sometimes being recognized and saying, you know, that job that needed doing, David went ahead and did it. Whichever David we're talking about. It needed doing, and they did it. They didn't look for a reward. They didn't look to be noticed. They just did it because it needed to be done. That's what humility is all about. That's the kind of wisdom that we're to live with. You're beginning to get the picture. There's a contrast in the world that wisdom is being the best that I can be in the sense of getting the best that I can get. But wisdom from God is to be the best that I can be so that I can glorify God in my life. And James says in chapter 3, verse 17, the wisdom that comes from heaven is, first of all, pure. First of all, pure. What does it mean to be pure? It means to have a clean heart. There's a psalm, isn't there, that talks about having a clean heart before God. How can I have a clean heart? Well, I can receive the forgiveness and cleansing of God. So so that the thought life and the heart, my heart's desires can be cleansed by God. That means I need to, somebody used to say years ago, keep short accounts with God. So that when things have gone wrong, I can come and say, Lord, you know, I'm not so pure this week. My thoughts have been bad. The things I've done have been wrong, but can I come and receive your forgiveness? That doesn't give you an excuse to do the bad stuff, by the way. You think, oh, I can make a few mistakes this week because I can get forgiveness at the end of the day. It's not like that. But keep short accounts with God means simply coming back to God and saying, it hasn't quite worked out this week. I've made some mistakes. And again, receiving his cleansing and renewing in my heart. Peace loving. Well, there we are. That speaks for itself, doesn't it? Looking to bring peace into situations. Considerate, it says, for other people. Thinking about how your actions and your words would touch other people. Submissive, not always pushy. Submissive doesn't mean meek and mild. Doesn't mean hiding away. It means thinking of others before you act. Thinking of others before you go ahead. Mercy, compassion. Producing good fruit, he says. And again, what's the fruit that my life produces? What good things are there to look at in my life that people can see? Impartial. And finally, sincere. What you see is what you get. Not putting on masks and pretending to be something I'm not, but just being natural. I loved it when a good old friend of mine in one of our churches said to me one day, what I like about you, and I'll try and do his East End accent if I can, what about you like about you? He said, you're always honest and you tell us when you've done it wrong. And I do it wrong. You know, a preacher doesn't stand up the front and say, I've got it all right. All you need to do is to copy me. If that preacher says that, then probably don't copy him because it's probably not good. But seriously, the one who says, I need God's grace, I need God's wisdom too. So wisdom, God's wisdom, is a living testimony. It's not putting myself down. It's recognizing that Christ empowers me. And the question we can ask ourselves is, am I living? Is there a next one? Yeah, right, I'm not quite there yet. Okay, that's fine. I lost track of them slightly. So the question we can ask ourselves, am I living wisely God's way? What I suggest you do later, and perhaps in preparation if you go to house groups, just look at some of those things. Pure, peace-loving, considerate, submissive, merciful, good fruit, impartial, sincere. Spend a few minutes each day between now and the day you have your house group. So if you're on Tuesday, you've got less time than the Wednesday and Thursday groups, haven't you? Just meditate on some of those words and say, how do they influence my life? How are they touching in my life? Am I following the wisdom of God? Thank you. Well, the next thing he says is, a lack of wisdom leads to disputes. And here's an interesting passage in chapter 4. He says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? What was going on in some of the churches that James was writing to? I think they were arguing. There's a hint in another part of the letter that they were actually taking one another to court over their disputes. They were arguing and disputing with one another. I don't know if it was over theology, whether it was over property issues, whether it was over wealth. I don't know what it was about. James is not specific. But they were arguing and quarreling. And James says, you know, one of the reasons is you don't get what you want. And you complain because you don't get what you want. Do you ever complain? Do you ever complain because you haven't got what you wanted? But I wanted that. How many times have your children said that to you? But that's what I wanted for Christmas and I didn't get it. You know, it's all about wanting, isn't it? Do you remember years ago when access cards first came out? Remember what the slogan was for access cards? Anybody remember that far back? I went and got one, I remember at the time. Takes the waiting out of wanting. In other words, you can have, yeah, well, there you are, you see, you're not old enough, perhaps, David. That was the slogan years ago, takes the waiting out of wanting. You can have it now and pay for it later. And in fact, that's true, and there's a lot of things in the world like that. I've got an Argos card, and you can have your goods now and pay for it in 9 months' time or a year's time. It's all about wanting. I want this, and I'm going to have it now. And that's a kind of worldly attitude, isn't it? Wait, isn't it? I want this, and I'm jolly well going to get it, whatever happens. But James says to these people, but you're not asking God about it. You're complaining that you've not got things, and you're going at it to try and get what you want, but you're not coming to God. And you're wondering sometimes why God isn't answering your prayers. It's because you're not asking. You're not praying. You're not having a time of prayer. You're not praying about it. And when we've got ambition and when we've got a future, we need to bring it to God. And James says, you're just not praying. And when you do pray, your prayers are selfish. I don't know if you sometimes read some of the... I read, I had a story of an evangelist the other day who currently has three private jets, right? And God told him that he was due a fourth, a Falcon 7X. And he was praying for that, and he was saying to his people out there, send me the money so that I can get what God is going to provide me for with this Falcon 7X, so that when I fly across the world, I don't have to stop for fuel. That was his ambition. That's what God had led him to ask for. I'm not sure about that. I have a funny feeling, and please correct me later if I'm wrong, that that might be one of those prayers of selfish ambition. Am I being judgmental? Let's put it this way. I'm not praying for a Falcon 7X or any other kind of jet, or even a faster car. But James says, you know, when you do pray, you pray selfishly. You're not praying for others. You're praying only that you might get what you want. James is really writing to people who missed the point. They haven't seen that their faith should lead them to action, not selfishness. They haven't dealt with their selfishness and their greed. They're still looking only for themselves. They're looking for their own pleasure. And James actually gets a little bit angry or even snotty. Look at this verse. You wouldn't like this if I said this to you on a Sunday morning, would you? You adulterous people. That's not exactly a kind word, James, is it, really? And he didn't mean they were indulging in sexual misbehavior when he said you adulterous people. He really harked it back to what God said in the Old Testament. Adultery is really being with someone who's you're not married to. And God called his people adulterous because they were worshiping gods other than him. And he said, you're betraying me, you're going against me by committing spiritual adultery. And James says, you know, you people in the churches that he was writing to, that's what you're doing. You're actually worshiping the God of selfishness and ambition and getting things you want rather than worshiping God and following life God's way. And it's leading you to argue with each other. It's leading you to fight each other. It's leading you to live in a way completely opposite to the way you should be living as a Christian. James, these are tough words. And actually, verse 5 in there is a really difficult one. Do you think the spiritual spirit says without reason that the spirit he caused to live in us envies intensely? What does that mean? What spirit lives in us? Well, there's two ways of looking at it. One, there's a spirit that lives in us that's our natural spirit that's naturally selfish. That's why we needed Jesus, wasn't it? That's why we needed Jesus to save us. So that kind of spirit in us is naturally selfish. You don't need to teach yourself to be selfish, do you? How many people had to teach themselves to do wrong or teach themselves to sin? You don't have to do that. It comes quite naturally. First thought is often the wrong thought. Paul wrote in one of his letters that he had that fight all the time. And it may be that what James is saying is that's your natural spirit. But, he goes on to say, God gives grace so that we can change that spirit within us, so that that selfish desire can be changed by the grace of God. Another way it may mean is that God says, look, I jealously want my spirit to control you. I don't want you to be controlled by that spirit. I want my spirit to be controlled in you. And God is actually so jealous of us, so jealous because he sees someone else, something else taking over our lives. And God in the Old Testament is portrayed as a jealous God who wanted the people to follow him and him alone. And God hasn't changed. And so when he sees me being selfish, when he sees me pursuing selfish ambition, he says, this really gets me. I don't want this to be. I've put my spirit into Tim. I put my spirit into you so that you can be something different. And I get across. I get upset. I get annoyed. It could mean that as well. But whatever way it means, God still says, I will give the grace for you to change. Such a life is now possible. So, if we don't follow God's wisdom, there will be arguments and there will be disputes. Fortunately, I'm quite pleased to say I don't know of any particular arguments and disputes that are going on in our church at the moment. That's good. I'm glad we don't have to deal with that as a diaconate and try and come around to your house and sort things out and all the disputes that are going on. But clearly, James was saying to this church, you need to get this right because there are disputes amongst you because of your selfishness. This is what Paul wrote in Romans 8. Those who live according to the sinful nature have their minds set on what that nature desires. You see this fight that's going on? But those who live in accordance with the Spirit have their minds set on what the Spirit desires. Those controlled by the sinful nature cannot please God. That's very straight words, isn't it, that Paul writes. He says, you, however, are not controlled by the sinful nature, but by God's Spirit who lives in you. It can be better. We don't have to be like this. We don't have to be selfish in that way, but we can, with Christ's help, have the right kind of wisdom. So James is encouraging us to be wise in God's way, to seek God's wisdom and to live by that wisdom and to put our lives right. Finally, he says in chapter 4, wisdom leading to submission and resistance. What's the answer? Well, the answer, he says, is submit yourselves then to God. What does it mean to submit? What's submission all about? Isn't it accepting the will of God? Saying, I don't want to follow my will. I now want to follow the will of God. Lord, I'm going to follow you. Somebody used to use the expression, let go and let God. I'm not quite sure exactly what that means and whether that's quite a right way to put it. But nevertheless, what James is saying is trust God. Don't look to your own ambition, your own ways, but look to God's ways, because his wisdom is far better than yours. You know, Frank and I have been looking at the pipework in our garden, haven't we, Frank? When the leak was there. And I've got all sorts of good ideas. I'm sure I know this and I'm sure I know that. But I'm absolutely useless when it comes to things like that. You wouldn't have me digging holes in the garden. So I call someone who knows the answers, and he's coming on Tuesday morning. I call in the expert. And really, that's what James is saying, I think. Submit yourself to God. Call in the expert. Call in the one who gave you life. Submit to him. Follow his ways, and your life will be wise and productive. Simply said, he's saying, get sorted with God. Saying to these people, you've got it mixed up. You know, you've got your life all wrong. You're following the wrong kind of wisdom. Get yourself sorted out and start following God's wisdom. And then he says, resist the devil and he will flee from you. In fact, Romans 12 puts it like this. I urge you to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And there's some lovely verses in this passage here where it says, humble yourself before the Lord and he will lift you up. How am I going to get somewhere in this life? By pushing myself forward? No, God says, be humble. Be prepared to accept you are who you are, and it will be God that will lift you up. It will God that work in you. So when I try to do things myself, it simply doesn't work. But there's a change of emphasis here. James says, let God do it in your life. Submit yourself to him. Let him lift you up. And God will work through you. That's a promise there, isn't it? God says, submit yourself to God, humble yourself before the Lord, and he will lift you up. And notice when he says, resist the devil, he says, first of all, submit yourself to God, and then resist the devil. How do I resist the devil? Well, there's one way of doing it, and that's to say to the devil, get out of my life. Because Jesus has saved me, you've got no place here. And I can speak that when the devil begins to tempt me, it's quite right to tell him, hey, Jesus has saved me, I belong to him. You have no place in my life, I can resist you. But you know, the chief way that this passage, I think, is talking about resisting the devil is by living by God's wisdom. Because the devil hates it when Christians are active, when Christians are living God's way, when Christians are obedient to God. The devil hates it. Because it hurts him, doesn't it? It's all very well to say, devil, get out of my life. That's one thing. Yes, you can do that. We can do that. But it's much more effective when we start living by God's wisdom and living by God's way. And the devil will say, I hate that. That person is a credit to God. That person is accrediting God. God can be seen in their lives. The devil hates that. And he will attack. And we can resist him by continuing to live God's way. So, there's quite a lot there. There's some powerful words in that passage. Think on it during the week. Last one. God's wisdom, we're told to seek it and live. What's the best way to get the best out of life? Seek God's wisdom, not the wisdom of the world that says, push yourself forward. Actually, God's wisdom says, hold yourself back and let God do the lifting up. And he will. God's wisdom says, avoids disputes with others and accept the grace of God. So that when there's an argument between you, say, let's bring the grace of God into this situation. Let's see where we're together and we can heal this hurt together. We should work to heal those kind of disputes. Because they just, you know, there are so many churches, aren't there, across the world that have been broken apart by disputes and argument. Do you know something? As an aside, it's usually something really silly that splits churches. I'll tell you a little story. Don't tell anybody too much about this. But yesterday I went to help out the Wycombe Church of England Church set up the fete. And we had yellow chairs and green chairs. And some people said we should have them alternate. You know, yellow chair, green chair, yellow chair, green chair. Others said we should have rows of yellow and then rows of green. Well, apparently the status quo in that church is to have the yellow ones out on the grass first and then the green ones. And if you put them out wrongly, you'll really upset certain people in the church. So they have to put the church, and it just seemed to me so sad that a church would actually argue on where the yellow chairs go and who sits on the yellow chairs and who sits on the green chairs. I think I told you before that my son said somebody came to hit the church he starts going to, where Tom goes, and as they arrived, somebody said to them, you've parked in my parking space. But there's plenty of other, no, we always park in this space. How many churches have been divided by that sort of argument? James says, get rid of that idea. Get rid of that idea and start following God's wisdom. God's wisdom avoids disputes and grants grace. Grace to put myself in a place of submission to another. God's wisdom is activated by submission. Submission above all to God. It's also told in the Bible to submit to one another as well, but that's another sermon for another day. God's wisdom, how's it active in my life? Let's sing a song before David Hibbs comes and leads us in a time of prayer. Breathe on me, breath of God. That's what we need, isn't it? The Holy Spirit in our life. Sorry? What was it then? Oh, by faith. Sorry. Breathe on me, breath of God comes later. Good job we got Helen leading things. By faith. Mm-hmm.